Thanks for listening to this podcast of Faith Radio Mornings from Faith Radio. Everyone, this is the 9th of November, and this is also Faith Radio Mornings. It is the news and sort of topics of the day show that we have here on the Faith Radio Network, and we get up each morning with all of you as you are getting up for work, as you're pouring your coffee, maybe steeping some tea, or getting your kids off to school. Wherever you are right now in the listening audience, we are together in this as we walk out this journey of faith, keeping our eyes fixed on Jesus, who is the only King of an eternal kingdom. And I am the host for your show, Dr. Peter Kapsner. Certainly enjoy being with you day in and day out, hearing your comments, reading your emails, getting your texts. And at any point in the morning, please continue to do just that, whether you agree or disagree with our guests and our comments, that we love to hear from you because we're on this journey together. So call in or text at any time at 877-933-2484. That's 877-93-FAITH. And in studio with Rachel Sutton as well, who is running the board and the sound, and Paul Perot in the newsroom. You know those names. People who keep the show moving, keep the guests coming that may be speaking from some different angles on the different topics that are of interest in the day, and yet we are fixing our eyes on Jesus together. Another person who's a regular part of the show and a regular part of the Faith Radio Network is Carmen LaBurge, who hosts Connecting Faith, our midday program on Faith Radio, and she joins me regularly on Friday mornings to talk through many of the news items. Good morning, Carmen. Do we have Carmen? Carmen LaBurge, are you here with us this morning? We do not yet have Carmen, so we'll hunt down Carmen. She is down in the southern United States right now, and we are here in Minnesota. And I have to say, maybe she is trying to avoid the snow that we have on the roads in Minnesota right now. If you woke up in the Midwest at this point, you know that there is a white covering on the ground for maybe the first time this year for many of us. And I think I left yesterday afternoon to get here this morning, given the commute. And so already I need somebody to help me talk me off the ledge here. Do we have Carmen yet this morning to help?
Yes, I'm here.
Oh, Carmen, good morning.
Good morning. We had these little flashy power outages,
yeah.
And I think that maybe my equipment and your equipment, it's obviously now all communicating, and I would just like to say, I'm not sure that I appreciate the number of references to the word normal that were used in the introduction today.
Really? So tell me more about this, Carmen, because
help me understand. You talked about me being a normal guest, and I would like to not be a normal guest.
How about usual guest, Carmen? How about regular guest? How about trusted guest? Would any of those
words? Oh, nice. I like that one. Let's go with that one.
Okay,
we
have trusted and reliable guest, Carmen LaBurge, who is the host of Connecting Faith, that she joins me regularly and normally on Friday mornings here on the Faith Radio Network. Carmen, before we go to break, can you just talk me off the ledge a little bit this morning? I mean, I am not used to snow on the ground on the 9th of November, and I think I left yesterday for the morning commute here to the show. I think I would rather at this point go back to horse and carriage kinds of stuff. It's slow, but it's reliable at that point.
Well, and I suspect there's a lot of folks who have moved to your region, you know, for whom this is a genuinely unique and first time experience. So, you know, go slow, slow down, pray for the people around you. You know, recognize that, you know, snow's probably a part of fallen creation. I mean, right? I don't know. I can't imagine that in the Garden of Eden, where there was no clothes, there was snow.
Well, you know, it's a fair point, Carmen, although I will say snow can make for a beautiful winter wonderland. It's not fun to drive in. But what would you do, you know, in the southern neck of the woods, if you got a half an inch of snow like this, would you just sort of melt down, maybe crawl in the fetal position and don't come out, you know, like a groundhog?
We would have a snow day. In fact, we would have a snow day in anticipation of even a dusting of snow, because there's no snow removal equipment. People are completely unprepared for it. So we would already be enjoying a snow day if we were you, and therefore we'd be thrilled.
That's Carmen LeBurge. She is our normal, reliable, and trusted guest here on Faith Radio Mornings on Fridays. We'll take a break here, Carmen. There's lots to get into from the week that was, including the 2018 election cycle. And, of course, we saw right after that the firing of Jeff Sessions as the Attorney General, some controversy on that. And just south of you in Florida, there's also some further controversy around the voting in the ballot box and the election of Senator Rick Scott. So lots to come with Carmen LeBurge from Connecting Faith. Welcome back to Faith Radio Mornings here on the 9th of November. We're talking with Carmen LeBurge, the host of Connecting Faith, a very authoritative and trusted voice as part of the Faith Radio Network. Carmen, I don't know if you saw a lot of the headlines right after the election, but we saw that Jeff Sessions, the Attorney General, was fired. And normally that wouldn't make a lot of news, as presidents tend to make cabinet changes after a midterm election cycle. But in this case, there's been a lot of crying of foul from both sides of the aisle because there's fear that the president is trying to set up the possibility of hamstringing, if not outright dismissing, the Mueller investigation against him.
So I feel like if you are anticipating for a fairly long period of time that you are going to, in one way or another, replace an individual on your key leadership team, that that you would, of all the things that you had publicly planned to do, that you would actually have a strategy put together, you know, for how you were going to communicate this, who was going to replace that individual, how, you know, how the events were going to be interpreted. Like, they could have anticipated much. Well, almost all of this blowback could have been anticipated, and they could be managing the communication that's going forth in a much more effective way. So I have to think at some point, Peter, since we're a couple of years into this particular administration, that fomenting chaos, particularly when it comes to how things are communicated and how the media is given the opportunity then to respond, I have to assume at this point that's part of the strategy. Because Jeff Sessions leaving the cabinet is not a surprise to anyone. Everyone anticipated that it was going to happen probably shortly after the midterms. I do think that the fact that it happened while they're literally still counting votes in some places was an unusual choice. But, you know, it's now what's dominating the news cycle. Well, maybe that is part of a strategy that you and I are not privy to. So I do think that folks need to keep in mind that even when folks at the highest of levels seem like they're doing something that, wow, could have been more well thought out, you have to assume that the way they're doing it actually is well thought out.
Well, and certainly that's just some of the fallout from this last week's election cycle is what is the underlying rationale for some of the decisions being made. And, of course, we do see that the Democrats did take power in the House of Representatives. It was not the blue wave that some had predicted, but there is a desire at this point from the Democrats to really have a checks and balances system on the president. We heard this from Adam Schiff this last week.
And we certainly got to see why that's so important within 24 hours of the election, when the president fired his attorney general and replaced him with someone who shows every sign of being the president's Roy Cohn, of doing the president's bidding.
There's a lot of talk about the fact that the House is going to do a lot of investigating in a number of different channels over the next couple of years. Is this sort of what we can anticipate moving forward, is investigation and obstruction?
I certainly think that if the markets are reflecting anticipated stability, that's the way like financial markets interpret this, the rest of us could interpret that as anticipating pretty much gridlock. The Democrats are certainly going to seek to advance an agenda through the House of Representatives that in all likelihood will not pass when it arrives at the Senate, which is continues to be not only GOP controlled but has a strengthened majority there. But I think that they will also be advancing items of legislation like the Equality Act, which is going to be a revision of the 1964 Civil Rights Act to expand protected categories to expressly include LGBTQ people. I think we're going to see that almost immediately. It's not, that would never pass a GOP-controlled Senate, But you and I can imagine, Peter, the kind of language that is going to be used as a part of that, and how anyone who opposes such legislation will be labeled, and everything that they say is going to be then used in the next campaign cycle against them. So I think that that is much of what Americans are going to see. I do think that groups like Big Pharma, pharmaceuticals, they recognize that the change in the House of Representatives is actually really critical and important, because the Democrats have a genuine agenda related to the way pharmaceutical drugs are paid for in this country. And so I think that we're going to see some things move, because I think that there will be a need to work together on bipartisan legislation. But I think that when we talk about, you know, the sort of literally the big sexy issues, it's going to be bad.
Well, and certainly these issues that you describe so well, Carmen, that they drove, I think, a lot of energy in terms of people coming out to vote in this last cycle. I know for those listening in our Hartford, Connecticut affiliate this morning, that West Hartford saw 75% of registered voters show up to vote. That's up from 56% just 4 years ago during that midterm election cycle. I know in my little small town that there is at least 840-some people that voted out of the 1,300 or 1,400 that were possible. And so people really came to the polls this time around, given just the energy levels and the interest in the election cycle.
Huge voter turnout for a midterm election. I do think that that says that people in America are paying attention. I think that it means that we all do recognize the power of every vote. And certainly folks in Florida and Georgia and other places across the country where they're literally still counting ballots and recounting ballots, man, literally every vote counts. And so I think that when we talk about the health of the American democracy, actually one of the things that we are now experiencing is just how healthy our democracy is. That percentage of Americans would go out and vote in the midterm, vote their conscience, and then live peaceably. I mean, there might be some, you know, rancor in the media and people growling a little bit right now, but I mean, to my knowledge, Peter, no one has, following Tuesday night's election, you know, taken to the streets and burning down cities across America. That happens in other places around the world. And so when we think about the health of the relative health of our democracy and our representative form of government and the ability that most Americans have to actually go and vote their conscience, this week has actually been pretty good for America.
Yeah, that bloodless exchange of power every 2 to 4 years in a country that has been pretty stable for the past couple hundred years. It doesn't mean there hasn't been war, but it's a pretty remarkable experiment in the United States of America on democracy. It's the voice of Carmen LaBurge from Connecting Faith, who joins us regularly on Friday mornings. And Carmen, when we come back from break, I would love your take on how different religious groups voted in this last election and what we can learn from that, as well as the fact that it sure seems like there were a lot of suburban women that voted against the president, and a lot of it might be perceptions of misogyny that the president carries, and even some headlines coming from Beth Moore, the trusted Bible teacher, on her journey and what it's been like to be a female teacher in the church. So lots to come with Carmen LaBurge here on Faith Radio Mornings. Welcome back to Faith Radio Mornings here on the 9th of November in the snowy tundra of Minneapolis-St. Paul, in which I am. We are talking with Carmen LaBurge, who is in the southern United States, where it's a bit warmer. Carmen, what are you expecting today in terms of temperatures where you are?
Oh, I don't know. It'll be at least 60.
Wow. I'll flip you for location, Carmen, each week. Let's just decide who's doing the show from where all throughout the winter, if you don't mind.
We can talk about that off air. How's that sound?
Sounds great. Well, I see we were talking about the election cycle here in the first part of our segment, and you noticed some things in terms of the statistics of how religious groups voted this last time around. What were some of your takeaways from that?
So you'll see this reflected in the headlines in different ways, and I think that this is actually one of those stories that reveals the bias of media outlets, because if you just look at the raw numbers and the raw percentages of people who have voted, and self-identify as Protestant or Catholic, Jewish, members of other faiths, Islam would be recognized in that particular group, or those who are religiously unaffiliated who identify as what we now call nuns, versus a category that's like stripped out of all that and is identified as white, born-again, evangelical Christian. Now, what I find interesting is that white, born-again, evangelical Christian is now a category that is tested in terms of voting pattern. And so here's what we know by looking all the way back to like 2006 and comparing it to 2018. What you're going to see, Peter, is the numbers are actually very, very stable. The percentage points move, you know, a point or two here and there. Actually, the Jewish vote has migrated the most dramatically. In 2006, the Jewish vote was 87% Democrat. Today, it's 79%. But you're going to see that 79% reflected as a dramatic uptick for Jewish voters. Well, that's over and against the 2014 midterms, when only 66% of voters who identified as Jewish at exit polling voted Democrat. So I think you have to take a slightly more historical look than most people take. They just compare, you know, the election 4 years ago or even 2 years ago to today. I think you at least have to go back, you know, a little further. And then you have to ask yourself, why are we so fascinated in America by sussing out this one particular group of white, born-again, evangelical Christians? And why are we fixated on the percentage of white, born-again, evangelical Christians who vote Democrat or vote Republican? And they do. That category of people does, by and large, vote Republican. But that's not a swing from the past. So if you go back to 2006, 70% of those who self-identified as white, born-again, or evangelical Christians, 70% voted Republican, 28% Democrat. Go forward, fast forward to 2010, 77% voted with the Republicans and 19% with the Democrats. In 2014, 20% voted Democrat, 78% Republican, and then this time around, 22% Democrat, 75% Republican. That's actually pretty stable. Those numbers are actually fairly stable. And so I think that when we talk about swing votes swinging, part of what we need to recognize is the only reason that we start seeing one vote as swinging is because some other vote has stabilized.
Well, and certainly some people have categorized this election as the year of the female on a variety of levels when we talk about swing votes and demographics. And there was a historic number of women that were elected to the House of Representatives. And clearly some of the suburban women turned out in force to generally speaking, vote against Donald Trump and the Republican Party at this point. And Carmen, so much of this obviously stems from what we've talked about the last several months with the hashtag MeToo movement. We've seen such troubling headlines about how women have been treated historically across a variety of organizations. And Beth Moore, the Bible teacher, came out this last week a bit too and talked about her journey as a Bible teacher with misogyny. What can we learn from her in this entire situation?
First of all, I think that the fact that evangelical Christians are now at the place where we're like publicly having conversations about not just women in leadership, but women who are obviously have enormous platforms for teaching. Beth Moore is a well-recognized Bible teacher, literally ministering to, well, tens of thousands of women in person in events every year, hundreds of thousands or maybe even millions of women in terms of her teaching materials and the reach of her publishing platform. And so for Beth Moore to now be publicly talking about what it has been like for her to navigate you know, a frankly misogynistic environment in evangelical Christianity when it comes to women in roles of leadership. It's a conversation that has long been coming, and I think that she is the right person at the right time because she is highly credible, and I think that the things that she is able to say about her experiences may get traction because the men about whom she is speaking listen to her because they respect her and they are learning things about themselves and their unconscious approach to women and speaking to women and supervising women and on down the line. I think they're learning things from her that they really would not. Other people have been saying it. No one, they have not to this point been listening. I think they're listening now.
Well, it's such an important conversation, especially when there's a lot of different views. I mean, Carmen, you and I have been around in the church world for a very extended period of time, and I think the idea that we avoid having what's happening in culture drive what we do in churches in terms of women and men teaching. But I've seen a lot of good research recently understanding the scriptures in a way and staying anchored to them in which women like Beth Moore could and should be allowed to teach.
So it's an interesting conversation. As you note, there are a wide variety of views on this particular subject. I think that in the same way that we have to find our own language and own our own position when it comes to pro-life. And so I've gotten to the place, Peter, where I talk about being personally pro-life from conception to natural death. Well, I've actually really thought through that language. I have really thought through the conception end of life, and I have really thought through the natural death end of life. Now, I have to tell you that the natural death end of life conversation is much more robust today because there are a lot of Christians who have no interest in dying when it's time to die. They have a lot of interest in extending life well beyond what would be considered natural death. And so when you and I have pro-life conversations, and we have pro-life conversations that now include conversations about human flourishing and obviously adoption, but also minimum wage. So we have conversations about foster care, but we also need to have conversations about immigrants and refugees. All of those are now pro-life conversations. That is an expansion of a pro-life conversation that some folks in the Christian community are not yet having. The same kinds of expanded conversations are now happening around women and roles of leadership.
Yeah, it's an incredible time in our country, Carmen, relative to all of those things. And so I think these are certainly worth to be topics to continue to address. I know that we have Professor Jim Bilby of Christian Theology on Thursday morning for our Ask Anything segment. Maybe you and I will stay away from all of those issues and just, you know, hoist them upon Jim.
Hey man, that's exactly what we talk about every single day on Connecting Faith. I am treading into crazy water today. We're going to be talking about transhumanism. So,
oh, wow.
People ought to saddle up, man. Yeah. My guest today literally taught the computers at Google how to think like people. So I've got the guy today who, he's my first like genuine genius for Jesus I've ever had on the program.
Well, Carmen, I can't wait to listen this afternoon. Certainly normal does not apply. Trusted and reliable, and it's certainly the kind of topics you address on Connecting Faith. Normal would not be the right word.
Thanks, man.
Love it. We'll take a break here for Lighten Up and Bottom of the Hour News. When we come back later in this hour, we'll be joined by Dr. Gary Stratton, who also joins us regularly on Fridays. And we're going to talk a little bit about the development of character in a way that's consistent with Jesus. And of course, we would be remiss this morning if we didn't reference some of the difficulty of the shooting that happened a couple of days ago in Thousand Oaks, California, where mourners were on hand last night for a vigil honoring the victims of Wednesday night's mass shooting at a local bar. Around 1,800 people were on hand at the Thousand Oaks City Hall. Hundreds of college students were packed into the Borderline Bar and Grill on Wednesday when a gunman dressed in black opened fire on a crowd and then killed himself. We are here at this place yet again, and lest we become dull and numb to how difficult these things are. Just send some prayers up and sort of pause in your day, if you wouldn't mind, for the people deeply affected by these shootings. Yesterday on Faith Radio Mornings, we were joined, as we are on Thursdays, by Jim Bilby, who is a professor of Christian theology as part of our Ask Anything segment. And we are just talking about the difficulty of the shootings that we continue to see in our country. And Jim has some great points about what we can all harbor in our hearts.
Go back to the fundamental step behind that and healing our lives within ourselves,
yeah.
Right?
Yep.
And our lives within our families. And, you know, even further back than that, I think a lot of our problems, you know, that you and I have are problems I have inside me.
Yeah.
I don't like myself, and so therefore I project my unhappiness onto other people, or I have a desire that other people help me fix myself. We would never use it and speak about it in such honest ways, but a lot of these fundamental problems start at home. And so as Christians, I think as we seek to heal our nation, yes, our churches, yes, let's start by being comfortable with ourselves and admit first the sin, but the dysfunction and the lack of health and the poor self-esteem that we already have, and engage those in ways that is helpful and Christ-like.
I always love our time with Dr. Bilby. He's so accessible and depth and just brings so many of the relevant topics to bear about how we can think about him in our Christian journey. And if you want to catch that whole segment, go to myfaithradio.com. You can search for Ask Anything, Jim Bilby, anything along those lines, and you'll catch all of what Jim had to share on yesterday's show. Well, I see that Dr. Gary Stratton, who's professor of Christian formation and worldview at Johnson University, is on the line. And Gary and I are going to talk about what it means to develop the kind of character that is consistent with Jesus.
The term inclusion gets thrown around a lot these days, but not in the way it should be. This is Jim Garland. Jesus provides the proper definition of inclusion. Think of a circle with some people inside and others outside. Jesus does not move the circle's boundary out to simply include outsiders and affirm their sin. Rather, he says, "Come unto me that you may be healed." Step across that boundary and I'll make you new, forgiving your sins and transforming you into an entirely new person. You know, the most loving people in the nation today are those who have the courage to say, "I invite you out of the pit you're in. Regardless of the nature of sin, I invite you to come in." The good news is, He accepts us the way we are. The great news is, He doesn't leave us the way we were. There's more at jimgarlow.com. It's time to take a stand for what we believe as followers of Christ.
Love that song, Gary. That's the invitation to quiet all those other voices in our head or voices that are shouting through us on our phones all day long and listen and attend to the voice of our Father and get involved in that Trinitarian dance. Sure love having you on the program here on Faith Radio Mornings.
Well, I love being with you, especially on a snowy day.
Oh, Gary, you know, this is when we talk about developing characters, we will here in just a minute. I'm looking outside of our window right now, and it's increasingly significant snowfall. You know, you lived in Minnesota for a while, Gary, but you got out of Dodge. How did you manage to do that? Because my character, I realize, is still a bit bitter about the snow this morning.
Well, you know, 7 years in Hollywood was great with no snow ever. The problem here, it's supposed to snow here in Knoxville tonight, and it will shut us down. 1 inch of snow canceled school for 3 days one time last year. So we're not ready for this.
Yeah, no. And how did you, you know, Gary, because, you know, you're rubbing it in, having been in Hollywood for all those years. I thought this was going to be an iron sharpening iron kind of segment where you'd encourage me and help me and all of our listeners struggling with this. But you go to the rub it in card living in Hollywood. You actually commuted, though, did you not, from Hollywood to Minnesota during some of that time to do some teaching?
I did that for 7 years. So I remember flying into back into Minneapolis the day after the Humphrey Dome roof collapsed.
Yep.
I mean, just, and that's the first summer I heard my native Minnesota friend saying, "I'm moving someplace warmer."
And we definitely do drop the octaves, don't we, when it's time to move along those
yes.
lines, getting that deep voice. Well, we love having you on, and I know one of the topics for today that we wanted to cover was a bit about what it means to develop an authentic Christ-likeness versus maybe some of the religiosity in our lives, which is really, it's a temptation, certainly, to do the behaviors of our faith, but they're not always consistent with the character that we carry inside. And so, Gary, I think about if we could rewind ourselves into first century Mediterranean world, and we were hearing the words of Jesus. It was interesting that his constant invitation wasn't along the lines of, "I'm going to die to get you into heaven," though certainly that is a central dimension of our faith. He really invited people day in and day out to follow him. I think it's 93 times he says, "Follow me, follow me." And so much what was embedded in that invitation was to become like him as they followed him.
No, absolutely. That's how it would have been understood. And actually, the phrase "follow me" means very different things in different contexts. I mean, one of them is simply Jesus was establishing a college, what we would call a college, a rabbi who calls out to students after himself to travel around and learn his ways, follow his rule of life. So when he looks at Peter and says, "Follow me," after the miraculous catch of fish, it's not so much a salvation thing. It's just, "Come hang out with me. Come, let's be together, learn from me, and begin to live the kind of life that I'm living."
When I think about how Jesus then responded to any given scenario, Gary, I know that for me, I'm often thinking, so this is how I should respond as a Christian. But is there a difference between how we should respond and then try to do that versus how we just, you know, naturally react and respond coming from a place of character?
Man, it is so hard not to fall into moralism because we've got this incredibly high bar of Christlikeness, and actually, who can ever fulfill it? We need his constant grace and forgiveness even to stay in the same conversations with him. But to kind of lower that bar down, it's just the bare minimum things I need to do to not get mad at me, the bare minimum things I do to keep God's hand of blessing on me. That's just kind of the heart of religiosity, and it's the very thing Jesus came to set us free from.
Well, and to that end, there's something incredibly compelling, is there not? When you sort of know it when you're around somebody whose internal character matches who they are on the outside. There's a twinkle in their eye. There's sort of a lightness in their step, and there's something incredibly contagious about being around them. You just think, gosh, this person actually could be this way authentically, and I wonder how I could be like that.
Oh, it's so true. I've spent my whole life basically trying to figure out what are the practices that people who have actually become these great, saints of the faith, what do they like? These people get into what I call the deep blue ocean, where the love of God has so permeated them that they actually can live their life freely, giving their life away sacrificially to the needs of others. It's unfortunately not very many professing Christians that ever really get there. I had a chance, Sue and I had a chance to have dinner Sunday night with someone who's very much like that. They were kind of a little bit of a famous Christian and had written quite a few books. And I've learned to be ready for disappointment when I get around famous Christians, that they can talk the talk a lot better than they walk the walk. And this guy was just the real deal. Mm-hmm. It was just treasured moments in eternity to sit there and to share hearts and to hear what God had put in his heart, and this love of Christ that just compelled him to give his life away to others around him.
That is the incredible, compelling kind of story we can tell. And I know, Gary, I remember early in my ministry life when maybe I was doing a lot of public and visible ministry in churches and giving sermons, but thinking about, gosh, you know, I'm not really the best father in the world. I'm pursuing things in the kingdom and to the extent and expense of not being home with my kids and seeing their needs. And I think a lot of fathers and mothers can struggle with that. But there's this invitation in that to actually begin to change how I saw the world and what was important in the world, rather than just put on these behaviors of becoming a good father. And that really those are two very different invitations, are they not?
No, they really are. In that, to live our life much less out of being driven to do something out of some deep need for control, often hidden in our own life, and being called by God into this deep blue ocean of joining the circle dance of the Trinity, where this is all about them perfectly emptying themselves into one another as much as God has a one another. To enter into that, that's what he wants for our lives, and to have us be set free to not live defending our own selves, getting our own self-interest, whether that's advancing a quote-unquote Christian career or advancing our social status in our neighborhood.
And to that end, in terms of some of the practices, Gary, when we come back from break, I would love to get into this more, where you talk a bit about what are some of those characteristics that we can attend to and begin to grow in that might resemble but are different than sort of the religious expressions of our faith. And what is it like to get in this mysterious relationship with God in which our character actually does change? So we'll talk about that next with Gary Stratton, Professor of Christian Formation and Worldview here on Faith Radio Mornings. Welcome back to Faith Radio Mornings, where it's 11 minutes before the top of the hour, and we are talking with Dr. Gary Stratton about the development of character and how that is different than the development of religious behavior in our faith. And Gary, I'm so mindful of when Jesus is on the cross and he looks out over the people that have unjustly tortured him and are now killing him. They've pierced his side with a spear. They have jammed a crown of thorns on his head. And what does he say to them? He says, "Father, forgive them, for they know not what they do." And I often think I can't get into the mind of Jesus entirely in those moments, but I wonder, you know, was he doing this because he thought he should and just say, "Oh, these people are driving me absolutely nuts, but I guess I have to forgive them because I'm a Christian," versus did he actually see people differently? And even in his own suffering, he poured out love and compassion towards those people that were bringing him harm.
Well, I think it's definitely the second. The amazing thing is that Jesus, in taking on human nature in a way that we don't understand, Luke tells us that he actually increased in wisdom and in stature and in favor with God and favor with men, that they're, that's mind-boggling. Think of Jesus, who's fully God, but choosing to limit himself to have to grow up as a human being like we do, that this is a very developmental process. And somehow, of course, he wasn't limited by a sin nature, but by the time he was 30 years old, he was living in this, this virtually perfect connection with his Heavenly Father that is kind of hard for us to imagine.
It certainly is. And I think in his invitation into all of this, again, is to really develop things from the inside out. I'm mindful of his teaching where he says a good tree bears good fruit. And so when a tree is in the right soil and it has the right kind of things going up and down in its trunk, that the fruit that's being born from that, the tree is not really, you know, it's not trying super hard to bear a bunch of fruit. It just naturally bears fruit from that. And so, Gary, how do we begin to develop sort of the inside of our tree, as it were, so that the fruit that comes out really is authentically good fruit?
No, that's a great word. And that's why I was saying, for the danger of moralism and going is yelling at that tree, produce fruit. And that accomplishes nothing. But Jesus, you know, when he used that same metaphor in John 15, he said, you need to abide in me, stay connected to me. But he, everyone there knew there were two different vines that were part of a grapevine. One of them was the kind that just produced leaves that they needed to be pruned away. And the ones that produced fruit were like deeply connected into the vine so that life flowed in and through them. And he's saying, that's what I want you to be. And there are certain things, certain practices that we can do that can put us in a position much better to stay connected to the life of Jesus than if we just are kind of wandering around on our own.
Well, and certainly the question isn't whether we are going to be formed. It is that we are going to be formed. The only question is by what? And what are the influences? Yes. What do we listen to? What are we engaging in all day long that shapes and forms us? And so it just real practical, Gary, on a daily basis, what can this kind of formation where we attend to God's voice in our lives, what can that begin to look like?
Well, there's so many different ways. As you said, it's you've got to feed that that tree in your life, the right nutrients. You know, am I connected to the people of God? And that's not just going to church on Sunday morning. Do I have a good, close group of Christian friends or Christian couples who are speaking to one another's life, praying for them, confessing our sins to one another and praying for another so that we can be healed, who are devoted to the apostles' teaching, to prayer and to fellowship and to the breaking of bread together? It's out of that rich community that we're able to maintain a life of solitude before the Lord, to do those disciplines that help us stay connected, whether it's memorizing scripture or journaling or praying. And it's that out of that overflow of those cultivated things that the life of God begins to flow in and through us.
Talking with Gary Stratton this morning, who's professor of Christian worldview and formation at Johnson University and joins us regularly here on Friday mornings to invite us to think about ways in which we can continue this incredible discipleship journey in a world that doesn't always agree with the realities of the kingdom. And Gary, I think about this too in terms of the development of character. And does it really require actually shutting off and not attending to the voices? I think for me, Gary, I think, well, I'll attend to the voice of God for a little bit and then I'll attend to other voices. But I'm mindful of that passage where it says you cannot serve two masters. And I think subtly I am attempting at times to serve two masters in my life.
No, and to be able to, one of the most foundational things, I think it was Bernard de Clairvaux who first articulated this, was that we need to know ourselves in order to know God, and we need to know God in order to know ourselves, that there's this give and take, that I need to develop my self-awareness in that. Wait a minute, that voice in my head is the voice of compulsion and fear and my anxiety, and that's what I'm hearing. And no, this is the voice of the Spirit, the much more calm and peaceful, calling me into doing things that are outside of my own personal best interest, but looking at the people around me. And it does take great attentiveness over a course of a lifetime to be able to discern the difference between those two voices.
And as we attend to some of these different voices, and you talk about the development of different Christian character, are there certain things that you look for in terms of, you say, boy, this person really seems to be developing something from the inside out?
Well, I think it's a weird double take. I was thinking about 1 Peter chapter 1 today, where he starts out by telling us that God's divine power has given us everything we need for life and godliness through our knowing of him who's called us by his own glory and goodness. So it's already there in potentiality when the life of Christ comes into us by his Spirit. And yet right after that, he says, for this reason, make every effort to add to your faith goodness, and to your goodness knowledge, and to your knowledge self-control, and your self-control perseverance, and to perseverance godliness, to godliness mutual affection, and to mutual affection love, that there's a process by which we grow in those things. And it's by being attentive to the next thing that God's got his finger on in his life. He's always revealing his love to us. And at the same time, then dealing with something in our life that's outside the boundaries of his kingdom purposes. And it's this give and take constantly back and forth of revealing himself to us. That's wonderful. And revealing us to ourselves, that's painful.
Gary, we've got a little over a minute left here, and going back to the snow situation outside here where I'm looking out and the snow is just dumping outside of our windows right now, and I find that my interior response of character, Gary, is one of increasing bitterness. What would you suggest for me today if I wanted to be able to see the snow authentically differently, not pretend that I'm enjoying the snow, but is there a way and something I could do where I would actually enjoy the snow today?
Well, I think finding something that would make the snow a symbol of the presence of God in your life and to those around you, to go out and walk in and think about he's washed us whiter than snow and his forgiveness, to go out and to see his beauty of his holiness in that snow that blankets the world in white and covers our iniquity. Stuff like that would probably help.
Gary, that is entirely too convicting for me this morning, but I appreciate the invitation. That's actually beautiful stuff. I do love your voice. I love how you really are trying to attend to the kind of journey in which is sustainable for a lifetime, where we're not putting on behaviors as tempting as that is. We're really becoming like Jesus.
That's the goal. That's the call. That's the dream.
Well, have a great weekend. I wish you nothing but snow over the weekend in Knoxville. and I wish myself nothing but change. And we look forward to our next conversation together, Gary.
Thanks so much, Peter. Have a wonderful weekend.
We'll take a break here and we'll wrap up our first hour of the show and preview what's coming up in the second hour of Faith Radio Mornings. Grateful to Dr. Gary Stratton, who is, in a playful way, invites us to continue to follow Jesus in all of the really substantive ways in which we need to do so. I think so often about the division in our country and even in some of our churches, and to the extent that we really do become like Jesus, without fear, for we have a God who is for us. We can come into the light with these things that we pretend about in the dark, and God really does change that, and we really become people who can shine a light in the world. So love his voice and his expertise in that area. Looking forward to Adam Holtz and talking about movie reviews next on Faith Radio Mornings.
Again, thanks for listening to this podcast of Faith Radio Mornings. You can hear other podcasts at myfaithradio.com. Plus, remember, we are listener-supported, so your support makes Faith Radio Mornings and the other programs from Faith Radio possible. Make your gift at myfaithradio.com.